Thank you for coming back to listen to another episode of the Bite-Sized Blessings podcast. This episode does come with a trigger warning, however. Suicide is discussed, and especially what happens to those who are left behind. So if this subject is a sensitive one, please take care. Now, my guest, Thomas Brown. Thomas did lose his brother to suicide in 2001, and after a decade of grief, uncertainty, and confusion, he decided he needed to change. In 2012, along with a friend who'd also lost a brother to suicide, they set out on a cross-country bicycle tour for suicide awareness and the healing power of art. We discuss this trip. We discuss Thomas's brother. We discuss what happens after our loved ones are no longer with us. Now, Thomas has created a lot of beauty in his life since the loss of his brother. He spent 3 years as a group facilitator for a local mental health facility, helping others who have lost loved ones to suicide. And in 2015, he launched a podcast called Inner Monologue, a conversational interview show where others shared their journeys of trials and tribulations. Thomas is creating a lot of positive change in this world and is also lifting lots of other people up. But enough of me talking. It's time to hear from Thomas. So here's the very next episode of the Bite-Sized Blessings podcast.
About 6 months before we left on our bike ride, I was in full advertisement mode and I was like handing out flyers. I made little cards to put in coffee shops. I'm exhausted. I got up all morning. I was making cold calls, calling different places about different mental health facilities across the country, getting them to like commit to like seeing us. And then I had to go to work and I was on my way home and I drove past this this coffee shop. And I was like, you know what? I got a stack. I drove right past it. I'd never been there before. And I was like, I got a stack of cards in my car. I'm just going to do a U-turn and I'm going to go back there. I knew after I met Zach that there was going to be something more to our relationship. The fact that like he had, you know, he had the same birthday as my brother. He had also lost his brother to suicide. But then that we come up with this idea to ride our bikes across the country for suicide awareness while at a suicide girls community party. It was just like there was too many cosmic giggles, and I knew that there was much more, so much more to our relationship than hanging out, playing basketball, drinking beers, and trying to talk to women, you know. I'd always known that there was some reason, and it wasn't until that night that I was like in June of 2010, like, this is why we met, this is what we have to do. And we ended up riding our bikes across the country.
How long did that take?
We scheduled 7 months. Originally, when we started, we wanted to raise enough money to buy a van, like a beat up van, and hire somebody to drive it for us. Because being in film school, I wanted to do a documentary. So I wanted to hire somebody that was, you know, competent in knowing how to get around new places, could take care of us if we needed, you know, when we needed water and food, and but would also videotape while we were doing speaking engagements and talking with different communities around the country. Because we set up like a ton of events sponsored by mental health facilities where we talked with people that lost loved ones to suicide, talked to therapists, talked to activists, talked to lawmakers. We didn't raise the money that we needed to buy a van, even a beat up van, let alone pay somebody to travel with us for 7 months. So we just had a lot of piss and vinegar and we're like, well, we're just going to ride our bikes. All right. We don't need a support vehicle. Meanwhile, I have a truck at home that was totally capable of being a support vehicle. So we rented a car. We drove it out to San Francisco and once we had a place to start from, and we actually got the Coast Guard in Sausalito, who part of their beat is San Francisco Bay. And they're the first ones on site when people end their lives by jumping from the bridge. So they took us in and then they drove us up to the top of the bridge. And they were the ones that like said good journey and sent us on our way. But we drove out there in a rented van, had to get the van back to the airport and then travel the night before our bike ride, ride our bikes like 10 miles through San Francisco, through all those hills. And, you know, Phoenix is nothing compared to San Francisco, just in topography alone. The hills in San Francisco are crazy. So once we California beat the hell out of us with all the mountains and hills that we had to ride through, we're like, look, we need to be able to get to our events on time. We can't just show up and do an event when we get to town. The events are scheduled. We need to be at these places at a certain time. So, you know, 7,000 miles across the country is kind of like doing a round trip across the country. It's not a straight line. Like we did a W around the country. We just like went everywhere. And so I was like, look, when we walked across the country, we had two walking teams and they had an RV. And since I was one of the filmmakers, I had a Jeep. So what I would do is I would leapfrog the walkers like by like 5 miles, walk to them with my camera gear and then walk backwards with them interviewing them. Or I would set up my camera and have them walk past and I'd get some B-roll. I was like, we had a support vehicle and one team would walk in the morning and another team would walk at the end of the afternoon. And it was a team effort. We can do that with what we're doing. And if one of us gets injured, it won't stop us from continuing. So when we got back to Arizona, I just got my truck. I kind of retrofitted it. We got like something like a bike rack for the back of the truck. So when one of us would drive while the other person rode their bike. And so we did that from Arizona all the way. We did 21 states. We did California with minimal support. And once we got to Arizona, we went all out and just like used the support vehicle. So and a typical day of riding would be if you're driving, you know, you're doing like the administration work for the team, just on your cell phone, which is the beauty of smartphones, while the other person is riding. But you have to like go along the route with them. In the West, it wasn't until we got to Georgia that you just put on your hazards and you follow the person. Cause in Georgia, for some reason, and all the up the rest of the East Coast, there weren't shoulders to drive on, to ride your bike on. Where out here, massive shoulders you could ride on and you're pretty safe. I could tell you about the day that my brother died because there was some magic that happened in there that was like the universe telling me that something was wrong. There was like a tremor in the force. But maybe if I ever come back, I could share that story. I want to share something from the bike ride, which was for him, but it was still something magical. And this might seem mundane to people. The main message of my book is to invite people to look at their life as an epic journey, an epic tale, a story that they're the main character in. And sometimes as the main character, you're the villain. Sometimes you're the hero. But that you're the main character in your story and you need to be present with your life. So when we started our bike ride, we had not made contact with the place that we were going to end at. There's a Chapel of Sacred Mirrors. It's an art retreat center in upstate New York. We left at the Golden Gate Bridge because of the documentary, The Bridge, which is about people that have gone there to end their lives. So we wanted to begin at a place that was kind of synonymous with suicide. And we wanted to end at a place that was all about the power of art, then how art can be used as a tool to heal. And so we ended at a place that we felt was like transcending pain. And so we hadn't made contact with them yet. We knew that we were going to go there. I called a few times. I got a little run around from some of the people that worked there. I didn't expect to talk to Alex or Allison Gray at that moment. So we just said, let's go. We're going. If we get there and we never make contact, we'll just ride up on the last day. And we said, hey, we rode our bike 7,000 miles. And we did it for suicide awareness. And we were inspired by Alex's philosophy and art. Do you have a place we could rent, or can you tell us where we can go to get a hotel? You know, so when we were in San Francisco or Santa Cruz, we spoke with an organization called MAPS, Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies. All right. Alex Nelson's gray art is influenced by psychedelic journeys that they've taken. So when we were interviewing MAPS, so originally I wanted to shoot a film for this, but it just got too overwhelming. So I decided to write a book instead. But I was interviewing Brad Burge, who is kind of like the outreach coordinator for MAPS, and he's like, so you're going to the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors? I was like, yeah, that's our destination. He's like, so what did they say about your ride? And I was like, I don't know. They don't know that we're doing it. They're like, yeah, they don't know. I was like, I called a few times, but I didn't get any headway. And he's like, that's crazy. He's like, I know the Grays. I'm going to reach out to them for you. So by the time we got back to Phoenix, I finally got an email from Brad and from Allison Gray saying, like, we would love to have them. We're really supportive of their mission. And I'm going to put you in contact with our hospitality manager and event coordinator, Sharon Stelluto. And you just, anytime you need anything, you email her. So I would email Sharon once a month. I'm going to backtrack a little bit from this point, but remember, we made contact and it was because of MAPS. About 6 months before we left on our bike ride, I was in full advertisement mode and I was like handing out flyers. I made little cards to put in coffee shops. I'm exhausted. I got up all morning. I was making cold calls, calling different places about different mental health facilities across the country, getting them to like commit to like seeing us. And then I had to go to work and I was on my way home and I drove past this coffee shop. And I was like, you know what? I got a stack. I drove right past it. I'd never been there before. And I was like, I got a stack of cards in my car. I'm just going to do a U-turn and I'm going to go back there. So I go in there and I'm trying to find a place to put like the stack of cards. There's nothing there. And the woman behind the counter, she's like, you want to leave something to advertise? I was like, yeah. She's like, yeah, we don't do that. The owner doesn't like that, but can I see what you're doing? So I hand her one of the cards. She's like, man, this is so important. You're riding your bike for suicide awareness. She's like, and you're going to, where are you stopping at? And I told her we were going to end at the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors. She's like, have you ever heard of MAPS? I was like, no, I've never heard of MAPS. She's like, would you like to come by? Like, maybe we'll talk like later this week. So I went and I chatted with her. And if it wasn't for her, I would have never known about MAPS to even call MAPS to set up a meeting with them. Now back to, so that was just to me like one, like pay attention to your experiences in your life and recognizing the importance of one thing leading to another. It's very story. It's very narrative. Like, and there's like a magic that's in that, you know, the magic doesn't just happen in a book when we're reading the story about some fictional person or when we're watching a movie. It's happening in your life every single day. You just got to pay attention. So once a month, we're in contact with Chapel Sacred Mirrors and my contact to Sharon Stelluto. I email her once a month professionally just to say, hey, you haven't forgot about us, right? You haven't forgot about us. We're still on our way. And so the night before every big event, I would always call our contact and have like a 5-minute conversation. Well, when we were finally in Manhattan and we were like 3 days away from finishing our bike ride, I called Sharon and we ended up having like an hour long phone conversation. We chatted as if we'd known each other for a long time. And I really liked the sound of her voice. I thought it was really pretty. So as soon as we got off the phone, I Google stalked her and she was a looker. She not only had a pretty voice, she had a very pretty face. So when we got to Cosm, I was taken by her. And when I left, I gave her, we traded contact information and I talked to her as I was traveling back home. I took some time to travel home and Sharon and I started dating. And even though we were living on the opposite sides of the country, and she's now my partner and she lives out here. She moved out like 2 years after I met her, or 3 years after we met. But I just think that like, there's something that like, if I wouldn't have stopped in that coffee shop, I would have never been connected to MAPS, and MAPS wouldn't have connected me to the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors and Chapel of Sacred Mirrors connecting me to Sharon, my future partner. Now I say all of that, and another big message and theme in my book is when we have an experience, our ego needs to define it as positive or negative. That's just what we need to do to try to like make sense of it. But I argue that an experience is just an experience, and it's what we choose when we're able to learn from that experience. Now, how do I meet Sharon, who's 3,500 miles away, if my brother isn't dead? If my brother hadn't died by suicide, I'm not riding my bike across the country for suicide awareness in his honor. So a negative experience, something that we decide is negative, can lead to something that is super positive, just like something that we define as a positive experience can lead to a negative experience further down the road in the journey of our life. So I just invite people to look at their experiences that they're having. You're going to decide that you're going to like define it as positive or negative. Your ego is just going to do that. But if you can just be present enough to understand like, what is the thing that I need to learn from this experience, and how do I grow stronger from it?
Thank you everyone for listening to this interview with Thomas Brown and this very next episode of the podcast. For those of you who would like to know a little bit more about the work that Thomas is doing in the world, including his podcasts and his book, there will be a link in the episode's show notes. Please do know that suicide is a very real issue here in the States. But there are plenty of people and institutions who are working very hard to ensure that more human beings do not lose their lives in this way. There will be a couple of links in the episode show notes for you to access help for yourself or a loved one around this subject. Thank you so much for listening to these episodes. I know that some episodes are more challenging than others, but I do think it's important to have these conversations. And just as a side note, there's a little bit of an Easter egg after the end of this intro, so be sure to check that out. Thank you to everyone who listens, and thanks to all of you who subscribe to the YouTube channel. You'll never know how much it means to me. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Thomas. Understand that this world is full of ups and downs, of positives and negatives. Last week, I went to church with a friend, and the subject was grace. And in the conversational part of the service, when we broke up into small groups, I brought up dark grace, which a lot of people don't talk about. And I brought in a quotation from Shakespeare. There is nothing good or bad, only thinking makes it so. And so I want all of us to sit with that. That in this world, things that we think are negative or things that we think are beautiful and positive, yes, they may be that in that moment, but as time goes on and as life unfolds, maybe the meaning around them changes. Maybe we only understand a fraction of what is happening in that moment, and something that breaks our hearts might lead to something beautiful later on. So be like Thomas and understand that. Understand that dark grace exists and that it's here for us. That these things are not happening to us, but for us. And I suspect that very soon you'll understand that this world, it's a gorgeous place and it has your back and it only wants the best for each and every single one of us. Thank you so much. I know that you don't feel this way, but I don't want you to think that I'm saying your brother committing suicide was a good thing. Please don't.
No, I don't. I don't. No, I don't. Okay. I don't. I know what you're getting at.
Yeah. It's like this unexpected, strange unraveling of events that you could have never foreseen when it happened. Or even, I'm sure, 5 years later when you went on that walk, you could have never foretold the way life was going to unspool and all of these gorgeous things were going to happen for you.
If I was a fictional character in a book, we can just say that that was an inciting incident.
Yes. Absolutely.